Everywhere you go, burdened by the things you know and running out of chances. You have just begun to see how we have felt for centuries, celebrating grief simultaneously to drunken dancing. That's the way, that's the way. Exiles are entrancing. That's the way when they're drunken dancing. That's the way, that's the way. The team loves each other. That's the way, that's the way.
Welcome, everyone, to New Yiddish Rep Radio Hour. We have a very special show for you tonight. We're going to broadcast the English language premiere of Jean-Claude Grunberg's radio play, Mama's Coming Back, Poor Orphan, translated and directed by Seth Wolitz. You'll be hearing Shane Baker, Anita Keel, and David Mandelbaum. In the roles. It's 23 minutes long, and afterwards we'll have a chance to speak with Shane Baker and Seth Wolitz, and I'm looking forward to that. You'll also be able to call in live if you care to with questions for Professor Wolitz or either Shane or myself at 888-627-6008. So, without further ado, the English language premiere of Mama's Coming Back, Poor Orphan.
Mama, Mama, where are you? Ma, Ma, I'm sick. Ma, aren't you in your favorite chair? She's not in her armchair. Your TV's not on. Her TV's not on. Not even the radio. Mama, where are you? Ma, Ma!
Why are you shouting?
I'm looking for Mama.
Your Mama's no longer there.
Where is she?
On my right.
On your right?
On my right.
Who are you? Why don't I see you?
Because.
Because why?
Because I am God.
God?
God.
God? Then you exist.
As you see.
Then I've been mistaken all my life.
What do you mean by that?
I believed you didn't exist.
The important thing was to believe.
I was wrong. The others were right.
It's not because you were wrong that the others were right.
Tell me.
What?
What type of god are you?
A god among the gods who attempts to do his best, but who can do little and, alas, does even less still.
You're not quite god, then.
I am your god. Let's say your private god.
Ah.
Make a wish.
A wish?
Yes. What do you want most?
To see Mama again.
All right. Sit down and wait. Be good. Mama's coming back, poor orphan.
Mama, is it you?
Who else should it be?
You're coming back from shopping?
Where else should I come from?
Do you have something for me?
Who else should it be for?
What is it?
Potatoes, flour, salt, sugar, spaghetti.
Yum, yum.
Stand up straight.
Mama.
Mama's tired. Eat correctly.
Mama.
Did you wet your pants?
Mama.
Don't put your elbows on the table or your hands.
Mama.
Did you do your homework? The small errand, the big one. Go to bed, sleep.
Mama.
Do things with both hands.
Mama.
With two hands. Use your right hand, your right hand.
Mama.
Don't run, stay seated. You're going to dirty your clothes. You're going to fall.
Mama.
Did you put on your scarf, your beret, your hooded cape, your rabbit insoles?
Mama!
Mama's worn out. Straighten up. Lick the plate clean. Stand up straight. What will the neighbors say?
Mama!
What will the neighbors
Mama.
Say? Stop shouting.
Mama!
Don't cry.
Mama.
Don't move.
Mama, the lady in school said I had to take pills.
What lady?
The lady who came, she touched me there, and she said there was only one.
What am I getting mixed up in? Who's this lady who dares touch you there?
They call her Doctor, Mama, from the Red Cross. She's going to write you about the pills. The sack on one side is empty, she said. Only one has come down. The pills will make the other one come down. They'll fall into place, and then it will be complete.
It's the Red Cross that says you've only one?
Mama, there are three in the class who have only one. The teacher said it's tied to what we went through during the war. There's one person the pills won't help, and they'll have to operate on him, she said, that according to the Red Cross. He suffered that badly during the war. And worse, I've got to wear braces on my teeth, a hernia support, eyeglasses, and insteps because my feet are turning inward.
Shut up, shut up, shut up. Up!
God, 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 something's not right.
What? What? What's not going right?
My mother. This isn't my mother.
Just what's not going right, tell me.
Who are you? God?
I am the anesthetist. Your anesthetist. How's your heart, your liver, your blood, your bronchial tubes, your lungs? They're doing fine, no?
What are you going to do to me?
We're going to operate on you, my dear little man.
But since the Red Cross doctor said that the pills were enough,
I don't know, Dr. Cross.
Red Cross?
Your case, dare we say, if not beyond hope, is well beyond solving by pills, believe me.
But since the doctor...
Cross, red or blue, is not in this department. We are going to inflate it with silicon, then we'll plug it with a laser before removing the silicon and then reinflate it with gas. And then we'll seal it definitively. You see, the trouble is ours. You just have to rest stretched out on your stomach, Grandpa.
No, no, God!
God?
Yes, God. I want to see God. Just a while ago I made a vow, but it hasn't worked out.
You didn't get hold of more analgesics or even barbiturates, hmm? I'll have them pump out your stomach.
No, no, he came.
Who?
God!
You saw him?
No, I heard his voice.
You heard his voice?
Just as I hear yours. I wanted to see Mama again, but not the one I just saw. Not the evil one.
A mother is never evil.
This one was evil.
No, no, she was afraid, no doubt.
Afraid?
Afraid.
Of what?
Of everything. Afraid for you. Your case is quasi-hopeless. Besides, an operation like this at your age could quite properly frighten a mother who, if I'm not mistaken, and according to the most basic rules of calculation, is probably no spring chicken.
Exactly. I want to see her again, seated in her armchair in front of the TV.
Fine, fine. I'll see what I can do. I'm going to transmit it to the highest echelon. Just rest there and remain calm. Mama's coming back, poor orphan.
Mama? Mama? You're watching the TV without sound? Mama, put on your hearing aid. Mama, put on your hearing aid. Hello? Hello? I'm here, Mama. Get your hearing aid on. Mama!
Ah, it's you.
Your hearing aid...
It buzzes.
Fix it.
There are no more batteries.
If there had been more batteries, it wouldn't buzz so.
You haven't bought me any batteries.
Put your two hands down. Order, order now. Posture. Pull yourself up. You're going to fall from your armchair. What? You want me to turn on the sound?
For something worthwhile.
Did you see me last night?
Did you come by last night?
No, on TV. Did you see me?
No.
But I told you, Ma, on Tuesday.
You came by on Tuesday?
No, Sunday. I told you there's a talk show on Tuesday.
Oh, yes. I must have seen the beginning of the discussion.
I spoke at the end, Mama.
I don't like talk shows.
But I had told you, Mama, that I was speaking in that one.
When?
Sunday.
Sunday, there was a talk show.
No, yesterday, Tuesday, I spoke in the talk show.
About what?
I'll explain it to you, Mama.
What did you talk about?
In fact, about all we suffered during the war, Mama.
About all I suffered.
But I was there, Mama. I was there, too.
You were a baby.
Babies suffer, too, Mama. Babies suffer, too. I feel pain, Mama. I feel pain all over.
Sunday?
Not Sunday. Tuesday.
You're not coming Sunday?
Yes, Mama. I'll come Sunday.
Oh, on Sunday they always serve rabbit and mustard sauce.
At home, on Sunday, it was chicken we had roasted at the bakery with potatoes and onions and gravy.
Yes.
You remember?
Ask them.
What do you want me to ask them, Mama?
For some roast chicken on Sunday instead of rabbit and mustard sauce.
I'll ask them.
Good.
But rabbit and mustard sauce is delicious, Mama, a real French specialty.
I don't like it. I hate it.
Maybe theirs isn't good.
I don't know. I never tasted it. I wouldn't taste rabbit and mustard sauce for anything in the world. I don't like such things, I'm telling you.
Did Papa like it?
Papa? Your father or my father?
My father, Mama. Papa.
Did he like what?
Rabbit in mustard sauce, Mama.
How should I know? We never ate any. I already hated it. He liked roasted chicken and kasha. That he liked.
What's kasha?
You wouldn't like it.
What is it?
He liked to drink around with his buddies on Sundays. That's how it was. On Sunday, the only thing that counted for him was being with his buddies.
Who were his buddies?
Do I know? Buddies.
Buddies or friends?
Gambling friends, yes.
He was a gambler.
With his friends, yes.
But all the same, you got along well.
Who?
Papa and you.
We were married.
I know that, Mama, really.
We were, as they say, husband and wife. And then after...
I know all about after, Mama, but how was it before?
Before what?
Before after, Mama.
You're confusing me.
Sit up straight, don't slump, and don't blink your eyes like that.
My eyes are closing on me.
Are you sleepy?
No, my eyes are closing. I can't shut them at nighttime, but during the day they close all by themselves.
You're sleepy.
No.
Why is your leg moving?
Is it?
Stop moving your legs like that, Mama.
It's not me that's moving them.
Do you want to take a little walk?
What time is it?
Do you want to go out, take a walk around the garden?
It's too late.
It's still daytime.
There's a chill in the air. You came too late.
I come when I can, Mama.
If you came today, it's because you won't come on Sunday.
I shall come Sunday.
Why are you shouting?
I'm not shouting.
If you can't come, you can't come. It makes no difference.
I come every Sunday.
Not every Sunday. Not every Sunday.
Almost all, Mama. Almost all.
I like it best when you come on Sunday.
I come on Sundays, Mama.
It's not the same thing during the week.
I come every week on Sunday and on Tuesday.
Is today Tuesday?
No, Wednesday. Yesterday was Tuesday.
You came yesterday?
No, I said I had the talk show.
Said
what?
Are you earning a living?
Am I earning a living?
You make a living telling about how I suffered?
No, I live by begging. I'll end up on the scaffold.
You see? During the week, you get all worked up. On Sunday, you're calmer.
I write books, Mama. I write books.
Don't shout. So you write books. I know.
Don't shout! What are the neighbors going to think? They're deaf here, the neighbors, Mama. Everyone's deaf here. I can shout as much as I want.
Who's interested in them?
What, Mama, what?
The books you write.
I don't know, Mama. It depends.
Who's interested in what other people have suffered? Everyone suffered.
That's why there are so many potential readers, Mama. It creates a lot of clients, all this suffering, Mama.
I wouldn't like to read such sad things.
Wouldn't you be afraid of crying?
I don't cry anymore. Nothing makes me cry now. Why should I?
I don't know. Before, you cried all the time.
That's over. I don't cry anymore. Why would I cry? If I read, I'd read love stories. That's it.
I'm sorry, but I haven't written any love stories, Mama.
You should. That's what people want to read.
Well, look who's here. The famous writer. And how does she look today?
Quite well, Monsieur Director. Thank you.
Tell him...
Tell him what?
About the rabbit.
You want to know something? Yesterday, my son, he's a real fan of yours, saw you at the beginning of the talk show.
I was at the end.
You were very good.
You saw me?
No, my own son. He's a fan. Do you know that we can no longer take care of her?
Tell him.
She makes up allergies to her heart's content. Have you shown him your pimples?
Tell him about the chicken.
She comes up with pimples, eczema, blotches, and breaks in the skin. And then she no longer wants to walk. Tell her.
Tell him on Sunday.
If she no longer walks, she's going to find herself paralyzed. And then her bodily functions. She's a bit careless, you know, in her bodily functions.
Tell him on Sunday, chicken, not rabbit.
No, enough! Let's just drop it.
My dear young sir, you seem a bit agitated.
It's Mama. She's bothering me. Who are you?
Still the anesthetist. You're in the recovery room.
The operation took place?
The first one, yes.
And God?
God? My God has other fish to fry, I suppose.
Tell him I want to spend a Sunday, a really enjoyable Sunday with Mama.
Take it easy. Build up your spirits. Everything went well. Remain on your stomach. The surgeon's very happy.
I can see him?
He's already left.
Where to?
For his weekend. It was a stroke of luck that he came by to operate on you at the end of the week.
God, I am speaking to you of God. I want to see God again.
Your pills.
I'm allergic.
To what?
Anything in great quantities.
Then nothing in great quantities. There, written down in large letters. Nothing in great quantities. Now, take a rest. Relax.
Say to God, have a happy Sunday.
Shh. Be good. Mama's coming back, poor orphan.
Mama, is it you?
It's me.
It's Sunday?
It's Sunday.
What are we going to do this Sunday?
Some roast chicken.
No, besides that, what shall we do?
We'll go visit Grandpa.
Every Sunday?
Yes.
Why every Sunday?
He's sick, he's old, he's all alone.
And after what will we do?
We'll go eat your favorite pastry.
And then?
Go to the movies.
Great! And see what?
Whatever's playing.
A Laurel and Hardy?
If it's playing.
Mama?
Yes?
And which one's the fat one?
Hardy.
And the thin one?
Laurel.
I like him, Laurel, and you?
I like him, too.
And Charlie Chaplin, do you like him?
I do.
If there's a Charlie Chaplin and no Laurel and Hardy, will we go to Charlie Chaplin?
We'll go to Charlie Chaplin.
And what if there's no Charlie Chaplin and no Laurel and Hardy?
We'll see whatever else there is.
Like every Sunday, right?
Like every Sunday.
A romance.
No. That's foolish.
A cowboy and Indians and a character with a star.
Yes, my love.
Mama, I feel so bad. I'm so afraid. Why do I feel so bad? Why am I so afraid?
As long as there is life, my darling, there's fear with a little pointed end that causes pain somewhere.
So we're well?
We are.
We're back on our feet.
We are.
We lack nothing.
Nothing.
And the adenoids.
That'll be another time, the adenoids.
And Papa.
Your Papa or my Papa?
My Papa. I'd like to see him once, Papa.
Are we talking all alone?
Is God still trailing along in the corridor?
God? I thought you didn't believe in him.
What made you think that?
I read your books.
You?
Me.
And so?
It's sad.
What do you mean?
To see that you two are beginning...
I'm beginning to what?
To believe in God.
I don't believe more than that he came to see me, that's all.
When?
Not long ago.
I'm going to reduce the cortisone. It makes you high. Do you remember me?
You're the anesthetist.
No, I'm the internist, the director.
What director?
The home where your mother...
Mama?
I am the son of the director.
Mama.
I saw you on TV.
You saw me?
On the TV. I don't look at it much.
What?
TV. When I was young, I was a real fan.
Mama.
Those were the days.
Those were the days.
The garden was beautiful, wasn't it?
The garden, oh yes.
Go take a rest. Sweet dreams.
Tell God that I'd like to see Papa at least once.
I'll tell him if I see him. Close your eyes. Papa's coming back, poor orphan.
Papa, is that you?
Who do you want it to be?
Why can't I see you?
I can't be shown.
Why?
Too damaged.
Damaged?
Why are you hanging around in pajamas?
I'm sick, Papa.
At your age?
I'm 62, Papa.
Already?
And you?
My pajamas aren't fit to wear anymore.
No, how old are you?
42.
42?
42 plus one gold tooth.
I have all my teeth, Papa, but I no longer have a big appetite.
Tell me, son.
What, Papa?
The truth.
What truth?
About people?
Yes, Papa.
Have people understood?
Understood what, Papa?
People no longer hunt down a stranger in the streets of gray cities.
No, Papa.
The worker works in joy and each receives according to his needs?
Yes, Papa.
And children in the whole world have plenty to eat?
Yes, Papa.
And no longer tremble from bombing raids?
No, Papa.
No human being is discriminated against because of his birth or origin?
No, Papa.
Frontiers are abolished? Nationalism is put down?
Yes, Papa.
Mankind no longer behaves like a wolf toward other men?
No, Papa. That is... Yes, Papa.
Well, then it's to us. To us that you owe it. To us, the last victims of blind barbarity, whose ashes are spread about to fertilize the eastern plains. To us, the sacrificed, the victims of police raids, the incinerated.
Yes, Papa.
Then why are you hanging around in pajamas? The world is yours. We bequeathed it to you.
Yes, Papa. Thank you, Papa.
What type of job do you have?
Papa, I'm retired.
62 and already retired? We really did our job well.
Before I was a writer, Papa.
A writer?
Yes, Papa, a writer.
Enough to make a living?
That's how I earned my living, Papa.
In the Daily Worker?
Not exactly, Papa.
I would have liked to write about the life of the hardhats in the Farm Laborer's Journal, but...
Were you one of them?
No. Why?
Tell me, Papa, what was it like between you and Mama?
Who?
Mama, my mother and you. What was it like?
When?
I don't know. Sunday.
Sunday?
Yes, on Sunday. What was it like?
Well, you see, we were, to put it simply, husband and wife.
I know that, Papa.
And then there was...
I know everything afterwards, Papa, but before, what was it like?
When?
On Sundays, Papa.
On Sunday, I went to the cafe in the morning.
With Mama?
No, she was lukewarm in political matters.
And in the afternoon?
I went out to get a bit of fresh air in the afternoon.
With Mama?
No.
Why not with Mama, Papa?
She didn't like horse races. She went to see her father.
And in the evening?
I went to sleep. By nighttime, I was worn out.
With Mama?
We were husband and wife, I told you.
But what was it like between you?
Between us?
Did you argue?
We were...
Husband and wife. I know, Papa. I know.
Why are you so nervous?
Not nervous, Papa.
Yes, you are nervous.
It's the first time we're talking to each other.
Whose fault is that?
I don't know, Papa.
Don't think about the past anymore. Enjoy your life. Enjoy.
I don't know, Papa.
You don't know what?
How to enjoy.
Learn.
At 62?
It's time, that's for sure.
Papa, tell me, do you see Mama?
Where?
There, where you are.
Where I am?
Yes, do you see her?
She is where she is.
At his right side?
At the right side of whom? God?
At his right side, Papa?
Let's start again. At whose right side is she, son?
Of God, Papa.
About whom are you talking?
Papa, it was him who permitted you to come, wasn't it?
It was you. You who called out for me, wasn't it?
It was me, yes.
And as soon as you called for me, I came. If you'd called for me sooner, I would have come earlier.
So that's how it works?
That's how.
Why do you have the same voice as he has?
Who?
You went to the movies.
Who?
And you liked Kasia?
When you're hungry. Life was hard, very hard. And if we didn't do everything to change it, it'd still be the same and you'd be eating Kasia.
Papa.
What?
Why do I feel so bad? Why am I so afraid?
You're not a bit of a whiner like your mother, are you?
I don't know, Papa.
Do you like horse races?
I don't know, Papa.
You don't know too much.
I don't.
Then listen. Forget the past. Throw off your pajamas. Get up and walk. Poor orphan. Mama and Papa will never come back.
Well, you just heard Mama's Coming Back, Poor Orphan. And Shane Baker played God and the father and the anesthetist and the director and various other parts. Anita Keel played the mother. And yours truly, David Mandelbaum, played the poor orphan, I guess. In a few moments, we're going to be joined by our guests, Shane Baker and Seth Wallitz. Seth Wallitz translated this piece from French, the original French, and he also directed us in the radio play. Before we get to that, I just want to make a few announcements about what's coming up at New Yiddish Rep. This Saturday night, we'll be doing a reading of a new short play by Jack Feldstein called The Visions of Julie Levine with Shane Baker and Lila Smith. And we will also show one of Jack Feldstein's animations. It's called The Loser Who Won. It's a neon animation. And I'm sure it will be quite amusing, quite entertaining. It's at 127 West 24th Street this Saturday night, January 21st, at 8 p.m. On Sunday, the 22nd, we will be opening an art show. It's the art of Shoshana Brambacher. It's going to be works that are inspired by Hasidic tales, Yiddish theater, specifically the Golem and the Dybbuk, and music, the music of Beethoven, more specifically. And on the 26th, which is a Thursday at 8 p.m., as part of our New Yiddish Rep Chulent Theater Workshop series, we're going to do a bilingual reading of H. Levick's The Golem, which is in keeping with the theme of some of the works that are being displayed. Also, all these things will be taking place at 127 West 24th Street between 6th and 7th Avenue in New York City. And the nearest stop is the F train on 23rd Street. You can also get off at the A or at the one train, and we hope to see you there. And now I'd like to welcome our guests, Seth Wallitz and Shane Baker. Are you on the air?
I am. Hello. I'm looking forward.
Hello.
Hello.
Well, that was the more I hear this play, the more I am affected by it. And the more I am impressed by it. And I'd like to start by asking Seth to tell the story of how it was written, which is pretty incredible in and of itself.
Well, back in the early 90s, the author Jean-Claude Grunberg had an operation on his eye, because it was apparently defective and had been caused probably from not having proper food and attention while the family was hiding out in World War II. And so he had this operation, and unfortunately it proved to be unsuccessful. The eye proved not only inoperative, but in fact, he no longer really could see any longer with that eye. And so the anesthesia, which was obviously given to him to the operation, is where the play has its origins, because he awoke in the recovery room. And there, during this period where he had to stay on his stomach for almost a month, he had this extraordinary experience of, during the emergence out of this anesthetic, that he saw a flashing across his mind, his memories, his life, his past, in all of the most vivid possibilities imaginable. And suddenly he told me, because I had interviewed him, that suddenly he felt that he had a whole one-act play in front of him. He called when he came out of this experience on the bed itself, since he was going to be there for a month. He wanted to write out exactly as he experienced it. And so he wrote this play, he said, in one fell swoop. He never changed a word. It just came out perfectly the way we have it. And in fact, the only addition that he has given to this play is the word song. And I think it's very important for understanding that this play is for him a song, like a rondo, because the title, Maman revient, pauvre orphelin, Mama's coming back, poor orphan, is the refrain. And it comes back five times in this play. And between each of those refrains, there is another section that we get of this play and his different moments in his childhood as he desperately now tries to make connections between the past and his present and the realization that the whole experience caused, in a sense, from the Holocaust, the Shoah, left him without any meaning but to just proceed on in life, and that the now dead parents were telling him just exactly that. There is no meaning to what the Holocaust was about. It was a disaster, a horror, and you must go on and hopefully improve your life and the world.
Can you tell us something about the man and his place in European theater?
Absolutely. When we talk about Jean-Claude Grunberg, we're talking about one of the probably 5 to 10 most important playwrights in French theater from 1965 to the present. He has won 3 major honors, the Pulitzer Prize of France, Le Molière, 3 times for his plays. His plays are performed throughout France and in Europe. His plays are translated into German, into Spanish, Italian, Dutch, and even into Romanian, Polish, and Hebrew. So we are dealing with a European class playwright who is esteemed and performed constantly. It's really a sadness that in America he is hardly known, and only one or two of his plays received somewhat amateurish performances. But this is the beginning, I hope, of an introduction to this wonderful playwright. He is a man who believes that theater is the chance to describe, explain, and open up questions. What is the meaning of our experiences in life and how it affects us and how it shapes us? And so he does belong to that 1960s, 70s movement of what's called théâtre engagé, engaged theater, theater that has purpose, theater that has meaning. And he is also, at the same time, beloved because he's a very comic playwright. He takes the most painful subjects, like, for example, the destruction of a family in World War II, or the horrors of what happened afterwards as well, and he presents it in such a witty light that the audience laughs away until the end of the play, when it realizes, oh my God, we're laughing at, in fact, a horrible, horrible story. And usually it's about how the Jews were treated in Europe during and after World War II. So what he's a very essential figure.
What is the... it's an interesting... that you bring up this. He is a very Jewish playwright.
I would say that he is probably not only a very Jewish playwright, but he's also very much a French playwright. He's that new type of European Jewish theater that is emerging not only in France, but in England and in German-speaking lands, and even in Eastern Europe now. It is the emergence of a hybridic creation. What I mean by that is that the Jewish playwright playwright is not only a French citizen, an English citizen, an Italian citizen, but in functioning and writing in the language of the country, he's writing to two audiences. So therefore, in the theater, you have the situation of the victim who lived through World War II and the victimizer, the man who did other Jews in and who are sitting in the same theater, particularly in German-speaking countries, and laughing away and suddenly feeling terrible when the play ends. So we are talking about a very interesting phenomenon of the European Jewish playwright who is working always at with two ends in mind. He's reaching the Jewish audience, and he's reaching also the Gentile audience.
How does this relate to the tradition of Yiddish theater?
It relates in a very essential way, because Jean-Claude Grunberg grew up after the war in Paris in the Jewish working class, in what he used to call the Jewish proletariat of Paris. And there, of course, he heard Yiddish all about him. But in fact, in his house, because he had been hidden out in southern France during the war, no word of Yiddish was spoken. And he immediately, when he got back to Paris, the mother placed him in a normative French school. So he basically only has a peripheral knowledge of Yiddish and is basically a French speaker. But he read constantly the translations from the Yiddish of Shlomo Aleichem and Peretz and other Yiddish writers, particularly with a leftist orientation. And he was very much aware that he is a child of the inheritance of Eastern Europe and of Yiddish culture. And what he has absorbed particularly is the skills and style of the wit and humor and ironic tone of language. Every word in his play, you can feel the spritz of Yiddish coming through in its stylizations and witty phraseologies that could only come from Yiddish culture and from nowhere else. What I think is the direct inheritance of...
Tell me, Professor Wallitz, it's interesting for me, and I'm just hearing you speak about it, about the Yiddish, and could you talk about the interaction of that with French, which has a particular style and a particular wit? What is your assessment of the interaction between that Yiddish heritage and the French language that Grunberg is essentially the what he writes
to? Well, I shall tell you from my point of view, and certainly from many other people, such as at the Medem Bibliothèque, the Yiddish library in Paris, which was saved during the war, one has the recognition that the Yiddish humor is very much able to run parallel and, in fact, reflect just as easily the theater of the classical French world, particularly of Molière. And so the humor of the Yiddish theater and of Yiddish culture, which is always a sharp, fast, biting, and witty, is exactly the type of humor that you would find in Molière's theater, which has always been part of the inheritance of French culture. And so what you have is a man who not only knows his Molière inside and out, but he has the long tradition from just living in a Yiddish milieu in Paris and the texts that he has read. And he has been able to fuse these two stylistically so that when you read his play, any play of his, you will see immediately that he constructs with the tradition from Molière of what would be known as the quiproquo structure of seeming misunderstanding going on, but in fact, the understanding is understood by the audience and by, of course, the author, and we understand why the mistake is going on stage. And in the midst of this, suddenly it takes a sour turn. A comic but sour turn, something goes wrong, and that is where the Yiddishlich quality comes through. So this is the type of subtlety that we're dealing with when we talk about Jean-Claude Grunberg's French and Jewish inheritance, which he fuses so easily and comfortably in his theater.
Thank you. That was so wonderful. I enjoyed that very much. I'd like to come back to this discussion, but I'd like to shift for a moment to Shane Baker. Shane, are you with us?
Yep.
Shane, I just watched your Vodafone of the Big Bupkis, and I have to tell you, it's really marvelous. How did it feel playing God? There's a role one rarely gets to play. How?
We're jumping back and forth here between the sublime and the ridiculous. I didn't really feel like I was playing God so much in this as just playing the words and the script. And God has the same voice as the Father. Of course, several of the roles have my voice. I try to differentiate them somewhat, especially since we're on radio and there are no costumes, but I really worked at giving it the Father's feel there, and God wasn't so much a character that was in my mind, I have to say.
I noticed that during the process of rehearsing and recording this, that all of us involved in it seemed to grow fonder and more impressed with the piece as it went along. What was your impression from the first time you read it to hearing it tonight? What is your assessment of it as a piece of theater and as a piece of literature?
Well, I liked it immediately, you know, the first time that I read it, but you just don't get it all the one time through, I think. Now, maybe as actors who've worked with it for some time and with Seth's help as, what I call an extremely felicitous translation. I mean, it's a really nice translation, I think, not knowing the French, but just the feel and rhythm of the words. And having worked with it for some time, maybe we've brought some of that further understanding to the reading, but until we were in the room for playback there, when we recorded it, I really don't think that I got all of the play until then, until being able to sit back and hear it. And the rhythms are so wonderful. There's a lot of humor in it that I didn't get, you know, the first time through, the second time through, until I was able to sit back as a non-participant and really hear it. And I'm just in love with it, I have to say.
It's an extraordinary work. It really is. Before we get back to Seth, I'd like to ask you to give us some idea of what's coming up. I know that you're going to be doing the Big Bupkis, A Complete Gentile's Guide to Yiddish Vaudeville at the JCC in Manhattan. Could you tell us something about that and the dates and so on and so forth?
Sure. Really quick, that's going to be President's Day weekend, the 18th and 19th of February. And it's at the Manhattan JCC. As you say, the Big Bupkis, A Complete Gentile's Guide to Yiddish Vaudeville. I don't know who this Gentile is, but I look forward very much to seeing his work on Yiddish Vaudeville. And tickets are Billig Vibosh, $20, $15 if you're a member of the JCC. And if you like a sample of the show, look around at the Vaudaphones that are online now. VAUDEPHONE, and you can see a couple of samples from the show there.
And also, I might add at some of the new Yiddish Rep segments that are up on YouTube. If you want to make reservations, you can do so by calling 646-505-5708. I repeat the number, 646-505-5708. Thank you, Shane. And I want to get back to Seth for a moment. And I'd like to shift the discussion to Yiddish theater and what your view of the future of Yiddish theater is, how it relates to a modern Jewish theater, a European Jewish theater. We've been talking about it, and of course, Grunberg is only one example of some of the European Jewish playwrights that are active today and that have made a tremendous impact. How can we preserve our theater? How can we bring it forward with us into the 21st century?
Well, I think that what you're doing with the Yiddish Repertory Theater is really a beautiful approach to recognizing that our audience for pure Yiddish speakers who understand the language inside and out is not going to increase, unfortunately, because of the Shoah. However, it is at the same time a cultural tie that gives a certain unity to all the Jewish people who are not, let us say, Hasidim, and therefore can participate fully in a shared community of history and tradition, and who want to sense that they belong to a living tradition, even if the language itself has been despoiled by the evils of the 20th century experience. But this means, therefore, that this theater, the repertory theater, the Yiddish repertory theater, provides a bridge, a happy bridge that can provide not only productions in Yiddish of the best Yiddish plays that still can really activate and reach us, such as The Golem, as a wonderful example of a play dealing with a very important Jewish topic, The Golem, which has multiple interpretations, and also presenting plays by Jewish writers, whether they write in English, French, Russian, Polish, or Hebrew, and presenting it in English on the New York stage and about the country, so that everyone can be participants in a American Jewish cultural revival and development, in which we do not lose our past because of the Shoah, but to the contrary, we pull out from the ruins the best works that have survived, and which we can then use and perform both in the original language and in English, and we can tie it to the new plays that are being done throughout the world. Just to give you an example, in even German-speaking lands, they have a master Jewish playwright by the name of Georg Tabori, and who knows how to have lots of fun with his audience and at the same time stick it to them at the end. And he provides a good example of the type of play that could be done here in New York very easily, in which his plays need to be translated into English, and they can be performed, but the whole Yiddish quality of the humor will immediately be understood and recognized by the American Jewish audience and those who wish to, in fact, enter into the new cultural experience that's growing up. The American Yiddish cultural inheritance is now becoming part of the general American public. We are in a hybrid Semitic situation. That means simply that Jews and non-Jews come to watch the Yiddish play or the play written by an American or a European Jewish writer and can participate in it because their increasing knowledge and desire to know more about Jews has, in fact, been one of the positive developments since World War II. And I think this is the future where the Yiddish repertory company can indeed fulfill itself as the great bridge from the past to the future. And we, in the very present moment, are in a liminal stage where we are right now trying to, in a sense, the caterpillar being changed into the butterfly. We are going and slowly emerging with both a wonderful past culture and the development of a new one.
Well, one of the things we need to guard against is abandoning that the culture that we've come from. I think the temptation is to say that since there is no longer a theater-going Yiddish-speaking public, that it doesn't make sense to do Yiddish anymore. But I don't share that view. I believe that... we need to look. There'll never be an English translation of the Dybbuk to equal the Yiddish original. There'll never be a translation of the Golem or an adaptation of the Golem in another language to equal the beauty of the poetry and the musicality of Levick's original Yiddish.
I couldn't agree more with you, but the point that we must also recognize is that we have these glorious plays from the Greeks of Sophocles and Aeschylus and Euripides, and we don't hear first the original Greek. We don't even know how it really was pronounced. We only have the text. We can have it performed in modern Greek, and indeed, sometimes we're very lucky when the Greek theater comes and performs their modern Greek version of the original. With the Yiddish, we have the same problem that there is no longer an audience that naturally understands it. But if we do it with simultaneous earphones, we can at least produce once in a while a production fully in Yiddish, or, which I have also always believed in, do one act in the original Yiddish so that in fact, the audience can feel through the language itself its certain qualities and then produce the rest of the play in the English.
Well, apropos of this, on the 26th, Thursday, the 26th of January at 8 p.m., we will be presenting at 127 West 24th Street a bilingual production, not a production, a reading, really, of The Golem, since you had mentioned it, of Levick's The Golem, and we'll be reading selections from it in Yiddish and in English. And I agree with you. There are many ways that we can... there are many ways... Look, we're all groping for a way to preserve this wonderful treasure that we have and to bring it with us forward into the future. I don't pretend to have the answer, but we need to constantly keep experimenting. We need to constantly keep working and trying to find a way to make it work. And there are a lot of young people now who are engaged in the work, people like Via Moore, people like the young people that are establishing Yiddish Farm and are making the cultural aspect a vital part of that. There is hope. There's great hope for the future.
I couldn't agree more. Let me just give you an example of this same Yiddish humor that can deal with some of the ugliest of moments. For example, in besides Grunberg, the great German-Jewish playwright, Bori, has a scene in his famous play Mein Kampf, in which he has Hitler talking to his roommate, Shlomo Herzl, already a comic combination, and Hitler says, "My first love is music, a baritone at 15. My deep tones weren't, alas, deep enough for Tannhäuser. Oh, but of course, I don't suppose you know Tannhäuser." And Shlomo Herzl replies, "Which Tannhäuser do you mean? Otto Tannhäuser, Bernie Tannhäuser, or Ipsic Tannhäuser?"
That's very funny and completely unexpected. Look, we have a lot of work to do, I think the essential thing is that we do it with joy, we do it with an open mind, and we do it with a sincere desire to search for a way to bring this wonderful legacy that we have into the future. So before we have to sign off, I just once again want to go back to Shane Baker. Shane, are you with us?
I am.
You just did something very wonderful, and in some ways it was the epitome of Don Quixote and tilting at the windmill. Could you talk a little bit about the book that the Congress for Jewish Culture just published about, you know what I mean?
The guide.
We just published the Biographical Dictionary of Yiddish Writers in the Soviet Union in Yiddish. It's a 464-page book with 487 entries for Soviet Yiddish writers. It was the kind of magnum opus of Chaim Bader, the late Chaim Bader. And we're very proud of that there at the Congress for Jewish Culture. Gennady Estreich and Boris Sandler saw it through to publication. And we're selling it through the Tziko. If you read Yiddish, it's an important book to have. And believe it or not, we've actually started to sell a few copies because there are relatives of these writers out there. And Soviet Yiddish literature has become quite a hot topic lately.
If you want this for your coffee table, where can you get it?
You can get it through the Tziko, C-Y-C-O books .org. Or congressforjewishculture.org. Either way, write to us and we'll get you a copy.
I've already asked for two, and I'm waiting anxiously for them.
Well, I figured I'd get them to you here in New York, but I guess you're not going to be back because you're only in New York a limited time.
True, alas, taxes.
Gentlemen, I want to thank you both very much. Once again, Shane Baker will be appearing in the Big Bupkis. Actually, it's the return of the Big Bupkis. New Yiddish Rep had the privilege of originally producing it and presenting it. So the Big Bupkis will be appearing at the JCC Manhattan at 76th Street and Amsterdam Avenue in New York on Saturday night, February 18th at 8 p.m., and Sunday afternoon, February 19th at 3 p.m. Is that right, Shane, 3 p.m.?
Correct.
If you want tickets, you can call 646-505-5708. I want to extend my sincere thanks to Seth. I hope we did credit to your vision of the play.
Absolutely. I hope that we'll be able to see more of Grunberg, Tabori, and other wonderful Yiddish and Jewish writers, whether they're writing in Yiddish or in the language of the country in which they find themselves. Just think of all the Spanish-Jewish plays being written in Argentina at this moment, which haven't ever been seen in New York. I present that as an example of we're in a cultural explosion, and this is a chance for our repertory theater to really present New York and America with some extraordinary creative minds and beautiful theater.
Your translation of A Dental Tragedy awaits.
lovely.
That's correct.
Let it be performed with pleasure.
That's a surprise that we will have coming to you at some point in the future, along with some other very interesting and exciting projects that New Yiddish Rep is working on. Gentlemen, thank you so much. It's been a wonderful hour. And to all of you listening, I bid you a wonderful evening. And we'll take you out with a bit more of Luck in Exile by Jeff Berner.
Out everywhere you go, burdened by the things you know and running out of chances. You have just begun to see how we have felt for centuries, celebrating dreams simultaneously to drunken dancing. In a minute she will see a smart young man from Somalia. Pretty babies there will be when they get drunk and dancing. That's the way. Exiles are entrancing. That's the way. When they're drunk and dancing.
Don, are we off the air?